Greetings, everybody. It's Raphael. Welcome. Thanks for coming to the conference. And I'm really excited to spend this time with you tonight and tomorrow night. What I'd like to do is ask you all, one at a time, to share with us in the group how you're finding yourself in this very moment, mind, body, spirit. So, Deborah,
okay,
you're up.
That's what I'm. All right. So I am thinking about work because I am headed to work right now. I'm on 520 in Seattle in pouring rain and traffic, and I'm feeling agitated or a little agitated about that. I'm sensing agitation, and I'm feeling some burning in my right trapezius muscle. That's where I have my discomfort in my body. And I attempted to complete my day by now, but that's not happening. So I am, how do I say it?
I'm in.
I'm in.
Okay.
I'm in the thick of it.
You are in all ways, and I appreciate you for sharing honestly about that. What I'd like to say to you and also to everybody else is that one of the tenets of this work is that we are all welcome as we are moment by moment with whatever we're feeling, especially if it's agitation or contraction or anything that might feel like a disturbance in the field. We want to be as welcoming as possible as we can, especially if we're going to be in a position where we are facilitating with others. So even though it seems like right now what we're doing is just a check-in, it's actually getting us going in the direction that we're going to be headed on this call. So thanks for getting us off in an authentic direction, Deborah. I'm going to mute you now on my end and continue onward. And now what I'd like to do is hear from Karen.
I'm Karen, and I'm thinking that this is going to be hard. I'm on the East Coast, and I have to be at work at 5 o'clock in the morning. So I'm sensing some tightness in my body trying to stay awake and just starting late, but I'm feeling excited and a little agitated or nervous because I've got some family that are intrigued by my participating in this, but they're kind of challenging it, which surprises me. So I don't know what the total outcome of this experience is going to be for me. I've had a seminar with you, Raphael, and so I know personally that I'm very excited about participating, but I'm just not at all sure what's going to be happening in my total life around me right now result of the participating.
So tell me if you're in, and then we'll dialogue about that.
Absolutely, I am in.
Okay, good. Well, I think As always, Spirit is providing us with just what we need to get going on this call. Deborah got us off to a good start, and you are continuing. And what I mean by that is that you're getting some challenge around your participation in this call. I can tell that there's something important for all of us in that. So can you share whatever feels comfortable about that challenge that you're getting?
Certainly. Well, it actually goes back a little ways. I started to participate in one of the P4 year seminars, and my brand new boyfriend at the time really resisted it, and I didn't know what was going on, but when I sat with it a little bit more, I decided it was okay not to participate at this time. Not to agitate him. And he's the one, even now, who just isn't at all sure. He's teasing me in a way that I don't know what to make of it. I've tried to ask him what his issue is with the call, and he's like, no issue, no issue. All right. Then what is going on?
Well, I think, Karen, thank you for sharing that. I think that really gives us a certain insight to start out with, which is if we're going to facilitate emotional connection well, we have to begin with the understanding that nobody needs it, that there's nobody who we can tell should have the experience. And if a person doesn't want to have the experience or doesn't want to have the experience with us, then it's really important to honor and respect that. And that can be particularly challenging, especially because if you're coming from a good-hearted place, after all, you responded to the idea of surfing it forward, which, of course, is a play on words of paying it forward. I think we can recognize that everyone on the call tonight is really good-hearted and wants to serve the highest good, especially for those who are closest to them. And one of the most frustrating things is when we sense that somebody might benefit from that kind of facilitation, and we might even be inspired to pay our own money and spend our own time to learn how better to do it, and yet they're resistant. And if that's the case, there's really only two options that are left for us. One of them is we can model our own emotional connection whenever we have an opportunity by sharing what we're feeling in our body in any given moment, and particularly by sharing how any particular tension or frustration we might be feeling could be entering into the way that we're communicating with people. So, for instance, I might say to somebody who I think, wow, they might need a lot more of this work than I do, but they're resistant or they're teasing or they're challenging, I might not even get into it, but I might just say at a given point, when the subject isn't even this, I might just say, oh, you know, I notice I feel really tense right now, and if my voice comes across seemingly a little bit critical or edgy, please don't take that personally. That's just, I think, going to be something that's a result of what I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. So in that very moment, I didn't ask them to do anything. I didn't tell them they needed anything, but I modeled a possibility of how awareness of one's physical and particularly emotional state can lead to more caring communication. That's one thing I can do. I can model. The other thing I can do, if they're not interested in any kind of a process of facilitation, having a person who knows how to do this help them get deeper, still, if you're finding that there's an edge to them in what they're saying or how they're saying it, you might be able, in a neutral way, to say, I notice that there's an edge in your voice, or I notice there's a teasing quality, for instance, just using Karen's example, to what you're saying. Are you aware of anything that's going on for you? Are you feeling upset? Are you having any emotions right now? To do that in a gentle, inviting, non-accusing way, might give that other person an opportunity to check in, even if they blow you off in the moment. Maybe, you know, when they're in another room or when 15 or 20 minutes have gone by, they might actually wonder, what am I feeling? Is there anything to what he or she said? And then they can take up that invitation on their own and come back to you if they're ever ready for more. So all of that is a way of saying we can't push or foist our gifts on our family and friends and loved ones when it comes to this work unless they really meet us at least halfway. And it's really important to know that, especially if we want so much for them to get the benefit. So before I move on, Karen, does that make sense and kind of fit the situation you were describing?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Well, thanks so much again. I appreciate that. And I'm going to move to an old friend of mine whose name is different. I want to make sure I'm saying it right. I'm thinking it might be Taria. Is that how you say it?
You got it right on.
All right. Okay, Taria, so tell us your thinking, your sensing, your feeling, and whether you're in.
I think my thinking is on pause.
Okay.
Just kind of blank. Sensing, I've held some tension in my belly. It's moved up a little bit more to my, maybe my solar plexus. And feeling excited, a little scared.
Okay.
And yes,
good.
I'm in.
Okay, great. Well, it's great to hear your voice. Welcome. And thanks. I'm going to move on now to Joy. Let's hear from you.
Thank you so much. Let's see. I'm thinking a lot. My mind is racing. I'm thinking of all the repeating patterns in my life that I'd like to master through this work that we're about to do, and in particular, a relationship that I've been in recently that seems to have kind of imploded on itself, and so I'm still watching an entire, let's say, channel of my mind dedicated to sorting that out. Let's see. I am sensing tension and pain in my lower right-hand quadrant of my lower back, and some tightness around, let's say, the lower chakras, 3, 2, 1. And I'm feeling grateful, excited, and some anxiety and a bit of jittery energy. And I'm definitely in.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much and welcome. And we're going to move on now to Noni.
Well, I'm thinking that this will help me a lot with my own process and working with others in a kind of mission that I've been working with a group of people on oneness and shifting consciousness for 2012, and I'm sensing hunger and tiredness, and I'm feeling excited, grateful, and overwhelmed with all the projects I have on my plate.
Okay, and are you in?
I am in.
Okay, great. Thank you, and welcome. I'm glad you're with us. And now I'd like to go to Mubina, who's joining us from Canada and making our call international.
Hi, Raphael.
Hi.
I was rushing home from work. I didn't catch the very beginning of the call. Just got in like about 10 minutes ago, so 10. Anyway, I got the gist of what you were talking about. I'm tired. I'm looking forward to what this call can offer because I feel it's a perfect timing to just to get into a better frame of mind as we approach the new year. And the holidays always bring extra stresses, I think, for many of us. So I feel that this is an opportunity to find a way to deal with those stresses in a better way.
Okay, great. And are you in?
Yes, I'm in.
Okay, wonderful. It's great to have you with us. It's going to be wonderful for you if you notice that you feel completely open and expanded and at your best and in flow when you do that. But it's not likely that that's going to happen, maybe even the majority of times, unless you're real fortunate. I do this work with people both in person and over the phone most days, and there are many times when it's very important for me to know what I am feeling and, just like you, to do a check-in in terms of thinking and sensing and feeling. But when the answer comes back that I'm experiencing any one of the things that you've been hearing from people on the call, Katie, and otherwise, doesn't mean that I can't do it, and it doesn't mean that I can't do a great job. It just means that I have to be aware that all that is going on and as accepting as possible that that is my state. In other words, bringing no resistance to the state, even though I might prefer it to be different. And this is really important, and so let me pause to explain how this fits into the whole picture and why it is so important. If you're in any particular mental, emotional, physical, or spiritual state, and you are resisting it because you think that, therefore, then you can't be there for the other person, then you're going to be bringing resistance from your own experience into the field between you and the person with whom you're sharing. And what that resistance does is, first of all, make it more difficult for them to settle into their own acceptance of their own experience. But it also creates interference for your own intuitive sensing of what's going on with that person. Whenever we're in resistance, we either cut off or diminish our intuitive capacity. So, again, just to repeat, that doesn't mean that we need to be feeling anything in particular in order to have our intuition ready and present and helpful. But if we're resisting any part of our experience, then we're diminishing that quality in us, and that makes it more difficult to really get up close and personal in a compassionate way and accompany somebody else going through his or her experience. So we're getting a lot of pieces that are coming together organically as we get started, just finishing with our check-ins, so that's great. With that, I want to start and talk about something that I've already begun discussing, which is what does it mean to cultivate the optimal internal state when you are facilitating emotional connection with another person. And as I mentioned, I started by sharing around what Katie was presenting, that the whole of it really is about recognizing and releasing your own resistance. So in terms of optimal state, I just want to give a few more words to that. So to accept how I feel means that I don't have to like how I feel. I don't have to want it. I don't have to not wish that it would be different. And I don't have to even be okay for it to continue this way for any significant period of time. If I were to think that any of those things were required of me, it might make it very difficult for me to release my resistance. So all I'm really doing is noticing what's happening in this moment right now in my thoughts and in my body. And as soon as I notice them, the question is, can I relax into them? And I'm using the word relax very consciously because there's no strain in that. It's just a recognition that this is how it is. And a good metaphor for describing that is the experience of taking a bath or of sitting in a hot tub. Because I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but it's possible to sit in a bath and to have the warm water be right there, ready to soothe you. But there's a way in which you're holding yourself. And it's as if the experience of the water entering your pores and you feeling it fully isn't available to you. Because even on a subtle level, you may be contracted. You may be pushing or holding on, in some way constricted. And then in that moment, if you let it be your intention to just open to the water and to the sensations of the water against your skin, just that flip of intention will allow you to sink into the experience of that bath much more than you would otherwise. Now, that's a positive experience for most of us, sitting in a warm bath. And even there, it is challenging sometimes to be fully open because of everything that might be going on within us. So it's often, therefore, another step more challenging to really relax into the full presence of our experience when we don't like or want what we're feeling, or when we really wish that we could be more fully energized or available to be in a positive flow for a person who's showing up for an appointment or a friend who really needs us in a difficult time. But that same principle really is applicable. So that's what we mean by relaxing into your state, whatever it is. You know, sometimes I've had a terrible cold. I'm actually getting over one now, so you can probably hear it in my voice. And I'm thinking, some story like this, I don't even think I can do this session. I think I just need to cancel. And in that moment, I'm telling myself a story about the future and how I won't be able to be present or how it will be too hard. Now, if I just relax into my state of discomfort, really sink into it, let it be, I may actually go ahead and cancel the session. But I also may feel like once I'm in that state, I may feel clear that, yes, I can do it. And I've never had a situation where I've had to stop in the middle because I got clear information once I had fully opened to my experience of the moment. And there have been times when I canceled, and I never felt bad about it because I knew I couldn't give what I needed to give. And whenever I felt like it was okay to go forward, I never had the opposite experience occur. In other words, my information was reliable about myself and what I could give, particularly because I had stopped to sink in, to relax into the experience, and get good information going forward. So in terms of creating the optimal state in which to do this work for others, you might recognize that it's the same state that you want to be into in doing it for yourself. And another hallmark of what I'm sharing is that if you're going to have a great session with somebody else, you really need to, A, have done this kind of check-in first before beginning, internally for you, and then continue to do that as you go in the session with the other person. So those of you who've been to some retreats of mine know that we do an exercise where we widen the circle of our awareness. So we notice what we're feeling inside of our body even as we're listening and speaking to someone else. And in order to do that well, which you need to do when you're facilitating with somebody else, of course you have to start with you. So just to review, optimizing the internal state means really checking in and then sinking into what you're feeling, even if it's not pleasant or not what you'd like it to be, making sure you're in complete acceptance, and then continuing to do that really consistently, maybe, you know, every minute or so even. Just for, it might just be a fraction of a second to make sure that something important hasn't shifted in you. And also to kind of keep the general focus that you have wide enough to include your internal state, even as you're paying close attention to somebody else. One last point about that optimal state is going back to something I mentioned earlier, which is when you're in resistance, your intuition is compromised and your acute sensitivity towards somebody else is also compromised when you want it, when you need it. So I want to revisit that right now just by saying that if you're not wide enough in your awareness when you're listening to somebody and feeling into them to also feel into yourself, then you won't be able to pick up on some important cues that you'll need to be able to do really helpful facilitation. So this is a little bit of a kind of a jumping forward to an advanced point, but it feels like it belongs here, so I'm going to share what I mean with you. If I am in that state of acceptance, I've relaxed into my physical manifestation, whether it's symptoms or even any kind of discomfort. I've allowed that all to be there. So I'm as open as I can be, and I'm not trying to change my experience. I'm listening to another person. I'm listening to their words, but also to what's behind the words, what I'm sensing. Something that often happens is that you get a physical response that's part of your overall intuition or knowing. So, for instance, I might be listening to a person and he's telling me a story, and he's telling me it in a kind of numb or neutral way. And my circle of awareness is widened enough so that I notice, simultaneous to what he's sharing, that I'm feeling a kind of a pain in my heart. And so as he's talking, I just tune right into that pain, and suddenly I'm feeling sad. Now, in that moment, I can't know for sure that I'm picking up on what is in his field that he isn't aware of yet. I never assume that, but it creates a question. So in that moment, when there's the right pause, I might just ask something like, so you were just telling a story, and I noticed that you were speaking in a kind of a neutral voice, but I was wondering behind that, do you notice any particular sensation in your body? Are you feeling anything? So it's an invitation for him to check, and not either a leading question or giving him a sense that I know something that he doesn't know. But the reason I'm bringing all that up right now is that I can't use my body as a kind of barometer for what is actually happening in somebody else, or what would be the right word? I can't use its clues and cues if I haven't created that optimal state of physical acceptance, because the resistance, as I said, will create interference and also confusion that will make that more complicated. So that's what I wanted to share as we're starting out about cultivating the optimal internal state for doing this work for yourself, of course, but also especially for facilitation.
Thank you, and I thank you for the opportunity, because it helped me to drop in to a bit of confusion then sometimes that I find myself experiencing, especially in connection with this one person, that I feel that we were such mirrors for each other that it became a challenge for me to separate out exactly what I was feeling versus what I was, you know, presuming, let's say, what he was feeling. And I'm wondering if you could address, you know, accessing clarity of really, when you're in a really close connection with someone, sorting the sensations or the awareness out to know, let's say, boundaries, you know, where my boundaries are versus that other person.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's really important for us, because most of the time, if you're facilitating for people who are close to you, then there is a relationship, and that relationship carries with it a history, and also a way in which sometimes you might be intersected, if not enmeshed, with that person. So that adds another layer of complexity to what I'm talking about. But the best thing that I can suggest to get the clarity that you're looking for, Joy, is to use what I call the screen door technique. And that is, when you feel something and you have a sense right away that this could be mine or his or a combination of our thing together, then what you want to do is imagine that your entire body is a screen door, and that what you're sensing is the wind, or the breeze, we should say, blowing through the screen door. Now, if you cultivate that extra degree of openness, then reliably what happens is, if it's not yours, then it moves through and it doesn't stick. And if it is yours, then even though the screen door is wide open and the breeze is blowing through, it won't clear inside of you. You'll still feel it. And at that point, either it's yours to begin with, or something that has been generated in the other person has touched on or activated something in you. And at that point, it doesn't really matter so much what the origin was, but that you realize that there is something there that is yours, that is for you. And that gives you the chance then to recognize that either right then in the moment or later, you want to feel all the way into that and let that move through you on your own. If you notice that it somehow triggers you and you can't be a real open vessel for the other person if you're in a facilitation mode, then you have to really own that and let them know, and you can take a break. But if you know that something's been activated and you can allow that to be without bringing further resistance to it, then it won't cloud your intuitive capacity too much, as long as you continue to stay in that acceptance of it, and then you can get to it later. So I've had situations where something comes up in me, and I'm able to say, I got it, I feel it, I'm not pushing it away, but at the same time, I'm present enough to the rest of myself and to the other person that I can keep going and check in with this later at the end of a session. But you have to be, you know, obviously an authentic and integrous evaluator of that moment. Because if you go forward and it's not really true that you can give the person the attention that they need, and then at that point, you know, you can even, through your reflection, do some harm that you wouldn't want to do, and that was the opposite of your reason for connecting in the first place. So is that a helpful answer, Joy?
Yes, very much. I love that screen door technique. I'm looking forward to using that. I'm wondering, may I ask you a follow-up question, or should I save it for later?
No, go ahead.
My mind is really hungry to sort out and to have some clarity about exactly how did we fall out of this sync. Synchronization is what I mean, is because we had this lovely synchronicity, and it was completely based on a natural, complete acceptance. Because if we showed up with any kind of judgment, we're so the opposite of each other, which then, of course, if you take it to its extreme, we can find our own exact versions of each other. But anyway, the point is that we would laugh. You know, it would just bring us to this laughter, and we were always in this relaxed, complete acceptance of this, you know, what could be conflict energy. But again, in the non-resistance of it, it was just delightful and lovely. And then somehow, as we got closer and closer, and it triggered, I think, in the other person, a sense of not feeling safe, then it got to a point where there's no tolerance to even be present. And that hurt me a lot, and I don't know how to, you know, redress it, address it, or be different for myself, taking responsibility for me. Obviously, that's all I can do.
Yeah, well, that's really it's a good question. I'm glad that you asked it, and I think we might come back to it in different ways throughout the call. But let me just say, for right now, briefly, that you know, kind of answered your own question in terms of what's going on. You said that the closer that you got, those things that used to be just something that you could laugh off ended up creating a lack of safety. And emotional connection with oneself, and especially with another, can only happen within a real safe space. So that if we don't feel safe, or we sense that the other person doesn't feel safe, we can't push and we can't go forward. We have to stop and get safe. So just to give you an example of what I mean by that, from a client point of view, I've had people who have really wanted to do this work. They're passionate about it. And they come to me for a session, and they want to heal and grow and change, and they want to, you know, let's say, go forward in their career. And I'm hearing them talk about something from long ago that's been re-stimulated in the present. Let's say, you know, they came from an abusive relationship, and now they're seeing a person who is behaving in such a way that it's re-stimulating that trauma. Well, often what I'm saying to a person is, you don't have PTSD, as in post-traumatic stress disorder. You just have TSD. You currently are experiencing traumatic stress. And as long as you are not yet safe, as long as you can't get to a place inside of yourself and maybe even a physical place where you're safe, you can't go forward. So going back to what you're suggesting and describing, Joy, if there isn't safety, the first most important thing is to get safe. And how we do that, you know, there are a lot of steps to that. But I guess what I just want to say for now is you can't jump over that and you can't will it. So if you know that one or both of you doesn't feel safe, then all of your energy and attention needs to go to getting safe first. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And then you will be addressing during the course of this how to reestablish safety within ourselves?
Yeah, I hope to. There are some people who are on the call who know a lot about this work when focusing on themselves, and some people and who are mostly looking for some guidance in terms of facilitation. Other people kind of have a dual purpose. So hopefully I will get to that, and if not, I would just encourage you to be in touch with me, and we could talk about that offline if we don't get all the way to it, okay?
Terrific. Thank you so much.
One other question, and that's from Deborah. So thanks for popping up, Deborah, and you're on.
Okay, thanks. I sometimes, in working with others, feel the need to let them know I'm understanding and connecting, or I feel touched by something they've said or shared with me. And I'm just wondering at what point I might share that with them, and would that be considered a place of empathy, or would it be, like you said, premature? You don't want to say anything or anything premature that would come off as false or, not sincere or authentic. So at what point would I, and is it necessary at all to share my experience of what I hear from them or experience with them?
Yeah, I think that is a great and powerful question that has a lot of wisdom in it to begin with, and so I appreciate it. I want to highlight the fact that, I'm not a therapist. Some of you on the line right now are therapists, and different schools of counseling training have different points of view about how much of one's own personality and personal response should be involved or should matter. And so there's no one right answer to that question, but I do have some perspective on that I want to share. I've been in a situation where somebody is describing a situation that they're having or telling me a story about their past, and I am really, as you said, Deborah, touched and moved. And I've even been in a situation where there are tears brought to my eyes. And my sense is that only good can come in that situation where I've already had the feeling, I've allowed it in myself, and that person either can see it or sense it just by being, across, the room from me. So in that situation, I might just say, you probably notice I'm just really touched by that story. Or I hear that story and I just want you to know it brings up a lot of anger for me. I mean, I just feel protective of you. It's a situation where I'm giving a few words to what they already can sense or see, as I'm saying. So that's category number one. And the reason that I'm putting that number one is because I think it would be so counterintuitive and unhelpful if I pretended that I wasn't having that response, or if I was having it and was talking to them as if I wasn't having it, as if it was, you know, not there in the
mm-hmm.
space. And I think that that would be it would be the very opposite of what I would want to be creating and modeling, you know, because most of the time our troubles out in the world come from everybody pretending that they're not having all of the emotions that they're having. So if I just continued that in my session with another person, you know, oy vey, I'm part of the problem, not the solution. But then there's a second category, which is I know that I'm having a response inside of me, but as I feel into it, it doesn't feel like it's strong enough and kind of expressed enough in my being that it is coming across to them. And so therefore, I'm having a private emotional response. And the question still is relevant, do I share it? And I think that the first thing that I would do is, in that moment, let that question live in me and bring forward an intuitive response. Meaning that if I try to figure that out with my left brain or with my analytical capacity, I don't trust that that's going to get me very far. But if I feel into it and I then am called to say something, I will. And if I'm not, I won't. But also in that intuitive moment, what I'm really checking into is, would that be more for me or for that person? Does it seem like it's in their highest good for me to be sharing what I'm sharing? And that's a question often that I'm asking when I'm in a session with somebody else, because just to be honest, with not just with you, Deborah, but with everybody, because I'm not a therapist and I'm not practicing in a particular modality, I have some freedom. And one of the things that I've found is that every once in a while, the best possible thing I can do is tell a story from my own life that might be comic relief in the moment or might be just what that person needs to hear. And I wouldn't even be drawn to tell that story if I hadn't tuned in intuitively and noticed that I had that very feeling in the first place. So for the second category then, just to review, where I don't think that the feeling is coming across, I check in intuitively to see if it's in the highest good for myself and especially for the client to share. And if so, I do. And even though somewhere in the middle of my sharing I might wonder, like, was this really the right thing to do? I just, you know, do it relatively quickly, and I've never really found that it created a problem that way.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, that's, thank you. Yeah, that helps me, you know, broaden my, you know, potential with that.
Okay, good, good.
Thank you.
So thank you very much, Deborah. Even though I want to help, I want to serve, I want to facilitate someone's healing, their growth, I want to help them open up their blind spot, if I walk into a session with another person, whether it's in a professional context or a personal one, and if I, for one moment, am attached to that, to an outcome for that person, then I'm going to really compromise my ability to be present and to do this work. And, you know, that may sound a little bit daunting or confusing, because after all, if you're a therapist, somebody is paying to see you, and if you can't give them something that they can walk away with that seems powerful and positive, then maybe you wasted their time and money, or maybe they'll fire you and they'll go look somewhere else. But in this context, the greatest service that you can provide will come from not having an agenda. So you don't have to, by surrendering any particular outcome, you don't have to surrender the preference that you will serve. Actually, you will maximize your ability to serve that person. And so let me give you the most dramatic version of what I mean. It's not just like, I think you need to get this, or I see where you could go and I want to help you get there. Because in many therapy or similar modalities, obviously it's clear that we can't lead a client, or if we're a friend, we can't lead a friend. They have to get there on their own. But I'm talking about something more extreme than that. So when somebody comes to me and says they have an addiction, one of the first things I'll say to that person is, I want you to know, 100% true, I don't care, let's say it's drinking, I don't care whether you continue drinking or not. I am in complete and full acceptance of you as you are, moment by moment, no matter what you do, no matter what your choice. You have expressed a desire to heal through your addiction and make different choices. So I am going to support you in that. And I'll continue to support you in that if you're asking for my support in that. But I want you to know that when it comes to a time that you might decide not to do this anymore, or a part of you might rise up in rebellion about what we're doing together, that's okay. You're not going to disappoint me no matter what you do. You're not going to anger me no matter what you do. I'm going to be there with you in complete and full acceptance no matter what happens. That makes a huge difference. And I used one example that's very common with addiction, but there's another one that's even more dramatic that I'll just touch on, which has to do with suicide. So when somebody comes to me and says they're feeling suicidal, I say a version of what I just said a moment ago about the addict, that it's not my place to decide for you whether taking your life is the right thing or not. I'm not here in a place of judgment, and I'm not here in a place of knowing what's best for you. As long as you want to explore this, I will be there for you in full acceptance and hopefully bringing light to where there is confusion. What I will say to you is, if you have resistance that I can see as you perceive this situation, then I will do my very best to bring that resistance to light so that whatever decision you make from a place of clarity and expansion for you. And so often, even though I'm telling somebody that I'm not judging them and I don't think they're right or wrong to take their own life, I'm almost immediately going to the place of helping them see their resistance. And in rare, only in rare situations is a person not full of resistance when they're having suicidal feelings. So I'm not aligning with their point of view or the way they're holding the issues in their life. I'm just saying, I'm not above you in any way. I don't believe I know what's better or best for you. And I can't tell you how many times somebody has just relaxed into a greater place of openness and willingness to look at the situation when suddenly they feel like they're in a zone where they don't have to defend or pretend. And so releasing interfering agendas means, just to wrap up what I've been sharing in those examples, that when I'm sitting across from you, if I'm doing this work with you, there's nothing you can say or do or feel or think that I'm going to be in resistance to, or that I'm in any way going to judge. I'm going to accept it as what is arising in the moment, and then with you and with your permission, I'm going to explore it further to see if there's any resistance there. And if we can together release that resistance, then you get the gift of your own deeper truth. It comes from your own deeper presence, And that's why we were here together in the first place. Without further ado, then, let's hear from Noni. You had a question or a comment.
Yeah, I mean, that's the place that I would like to be when I'm working with people. And, of course, sometimes I'll notice that I do have an internal attachment to what they're going to do or what they might do. Like, let's say you were talking with someone you have a close relationship with and they're talking about suicide or something like that, or they're contemplating doing something that could be really dangerous. So I might want to, as a facilitator, hold that space and really get to a place where I can broaden my awareness to hold that anything is possible and I'm just there to facilitate what's true for them. But I might also have the reaction inside of me of, oh, I hope they don't do that. So I can take the space to notice that. And then what? I guess I'm just saying, you know, if we're not in that, if we're noticing that we have interference, what else do we need to do besides notice that?
Okay, yeah, that's a really great refinement to bring to the discussion, so thank you for that. Now, one thing we have to say as a caveat is that there are some people who are mandated reporters. So if a person, you know, seems to be in danger, to placing themselves in danger or somebody else, they might have to report it. And that just is the way that it goes, given somebody's licensing, et cetera. But if that isn't the case, and you can follow your greatest intention to be in that fully accepting state, Noni, and you notice, the first thing that you know, you want to do is you want to relax into it, just as I was talking about earlier. You want to maybe breathe into it. And this would all be invisible to the other person. So, like, you notice, oh, my God, they're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You have some kind of attachment. Please don't go there, you might be thinking to the person. So the awareness or the noticing comes first. Then the turning to it and accepting it in whatever way you can, breathing into it is one way, cradling it is another language that I'll use, meaning that if there's a part of you that's afraid, for instance, it might need you to know, it might need to know from you, it's okay, it's okay. So your awareness might be especially tender towards yourself in that moment. But then there's, I would say, kind of a moment of truth, because you can't go too far along in this process of facilitating and doing it well if you're somehow not in alignment, like you're pretending something. You just can't pretend is what I'm saying. So if you notice that you have that kind of contraction or attachment to something that they're either thinking they might do or not do, if it turns out that as you try to accept it within yourself, and it doesn't ease, like you don't get a little extra space around it so that it's just kind of a blip that then you can move through. Well, now you really do have a question. There's a legitimate question there, which is, do I mention that or not? And sometimes the very best thing might be to say, I have to be honest with you. I totally want to support you in a field of anything is possible, and I don't know what's best for you, but when you just said that you were going, you know, to call that person or get back together with that guy or whatever, I felt a little contraction inside of myself. And that's about me. That's not about you. That has to do with my own experience, with my own thoughts about what might be best sometimes. But I feel like I just had to say that because I don't want you to be getting that energy from me under the radar or unconsciously. I don't want it to get in the way of my ability to be in presence with you. So we don't have to discuss that, you know, unless you need to. We don't have to follow that. But I felt like I just needed to let you know that I had that little twinge so that I could continue to remain fully present with you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's very, very helpful.
Okay, good, good. All right, so thank you, Noni, for that. And I'm going to jump over to you in a moment, Joy, but first, Karen, who we haven't heard from since the opening check-in, has something to share, so I'm going to go first to her. So, Karen, you're up.
Mine was just a comment that I had a tremendous opening toward what you were saying, as you were explaining your intention around releasing the interfering agendas, because I'm seeing a huge situation with myself where I have interfering or conflicting agendas, particularly with this family member that I mentioned that's resisting my participating in this conference, this class. So anything that we do around this topic is something that will be really helpful to me, and definitely an opening there. I had a question start coming up that had to do with this person doesn't have any knowledge of your work, really, and no facility with the terminology. I think it would blow his mind if I started talking some of this. I'm noticing this in myself. So I'm not quite sure how to be present with that with him, and I'm sure that more things will come to light. will come to me.
Yeah, I think that's something very helpful to bring into the discussion, Karen, because there's nothing worse for somebody, whether it's your son or daughter or your partner, with whom you would like to share this experience. There's nothing worse than them feeling like they're, being techniqued, or like that somehow you went away and joined a cult and now all of a sudden you're trying to indoctrinate them. It feels very icky to have someone use jargon on you in some way. So I've endeavored in my own work to try to be as jargon-free as possible. Sometimes, of course, we use terms for shorthand once we understand, what it is that we're doing. But I would encourage you to, speak to anybody in a way that you believe that they can best understand. I mean, I was on TV early this week talking about the five things about feelings that you should never say to kids. And so the idea there was, how do we take some of these, relatively deep concepts and practices and share them in a way that children can be receptive to them and can really understand? So I believe it can be done. I think that if you do it with plain language, like when you said, I'm noticing, well, if somebody has a hard time with you noticing, that may be a bigger problem, right? But
right.
if you were just to follow up that, like I'm noticing when you're telling me that right now, I'm feeling really tense.
Okay.
That's just a reporting of direct experience, right? Or flipping it around, I'm not sure what you're feeling, but I notice that your shoulders are really tight and, up towards your ears, and I'm wondering, are you feeling tense or discomfort? So the simpler, the better, and always without assuming, and always with the kind of questions that help you come forward to a person and them come forward to you, as opposed to you speaking to another person, whether you're in a session or even just talking about doing this work, that will make them feel separate. So, for instance, earlier in the call, and I don't remember whether it was you or somebody else, you referred to chakras, and there are some people for whom that will just be shorthand. But if you were to turn around to somebody who isn't in that group and you would say, like, I notice that there's a disturbance in your third chakra, if they're not a chakra person, quote unquote, then that's going to push them away rather than make them curious and more open.
Mm-hmm.
So simpler is always better. And if you sense that a person isn't going to understand, then it's worth pausing and thinking, how can I share in a way that they will?
Got it. Thank you.
Good. All right. Thank you. And we'll go quickly over to Joy, and then we'll continue on with the program for tonight. Joy, you're up.
Thank you again. I'm looking to reconnect with the space of my question. What I remember is that I loved the feeling of what you were describing, you know, the complete acceptance of that person, even if they are whatever they're presenting about the addiction or what have you. And my question centers around I'm realizing this person is presenting with a pattern that my mother also had, that their comfort zone appears to be being continually in some sort of oppositional dynamic. You know, so if my mother and I, let's say, would have a discussion and I had position A, she had position B, and if after a certain period of time I would just decide, okay, I'll come to your side, I will take position A, she will either flip to position B or come randomly to position C or D simply because being aligned evidently wasn't part of her agenda. So how does one move through that?
Okay. So, first of all, if there's a dynamic like that that's going on between you and another person, chances are there isn't enough safety yet to be that person's facilitator for emotional connection, unless that just happens when they're triggered, meaning that, you know, their fight or flight mechanism is activated because of something that's been said, and if in fact when that person is calmer and more expanded, they don't go to that oppositional place. But if that opposition is more of a way of being than anything else, what you want to do is find out how much willingness there is for awareness. So, for instance, you might ask a question along these lines. I notice that sometimes when I take a position, you seem to almost automatically take the opposite position. And I notice also when I come over to take your position that sometimes you take a different position. First of all, is that something you've ever noticed in yourself? So there's an invitation for introspection. And if the person says, yeah, I have, then of course there's an opening. And if the person says, no, I don't do that, then you just have an opportunity to make a second gentle invitation along the lines of, well, it does seem to be something that I've noticed, and I'm wondering if you're interested in paying a little more attention there and seeing if that's the case, you know, when you give it a closer look. And if a person, and you're using your own language, not mine, of course, and the person is saying something like, you know, thanks for sharing, but, you know, don't tell me what to look at, or in any way gets defensive, then it's really not going to be productive to push further in that area, and it's also not going to be particularly safe for you, especially if you have that pattern going on for you, going back to your mom, as you said. But that's where, when it comes to family and friends, we do have, even if we're wanting to surfeit forward, quote unquote, and support them, we come to these places where we realize, whoops, our initial intention was to help, but now we realize that we've been given a gift. So what I mean by that is if that person were to have a relatively defended response, then I now have the gift of being thrown right into that same old dynamic that I used to experience with my mother, along with all of the emotions that are connected to that. So therefore, I have an opportunity to be more present within myself than perhaps I've ever been able to before. So I wouldn't do that in the space of that other person, but if I got triggered by his or her unwillingness to see what's really going on or to just stop, you know, going in the opposite direction, I would, you know, get out of that conversation as soon as I can and as quickly as I can so it's still fresh. I would go facilitate my own emotional connection. And therefore, I would get healing for me no matter what happened with that other person. And in fact, if there's anything more that I could bring to the situation, I would find that through my own willingness to go in and do that deeper piece of work for myself. Does that make sense, Joy?
Yes, and I'm new to your work. I just met you through Allison Cohen's teleseries a few months ago, and I was just really drawn to what you do because I realized, despite the fact that I've been, you know, consciously aware of my possibility to evolve and grow, that I keep on repeating a certain set of patterns, and this is one of them. So, again, if you don't want to go into it more now, will you be showing us more what that would look like going in and addressing it within myself? Because clearly I do believe that, you know, different people mirror different aspects of ourselves, and especially since my mother had this pattern, then clearly it's been a part of my indoctrination, let's say, as I grew up. What I really appreciated as a last closing comment to what you just said now is you brought a little bridge that I never saw, that is a fight or flight response. And that makes so much sense because my mom was really traumatized by World War II. And therefore, then I can have a lot of compassion for her. It's like, oh, I see that. If she always felt that bombs were dropping and she had to keep on darting, you know, to keep herself safe, then it would kind of translate into her interpersonal dynamics that she could never be, you know, aligned.
Right.
Have
right.
to be like a moving target so you wouldn't get her. So that
right.
was really a profound gift you gave me. Thank you.
Good. You're more than welcome to jump up to Deborah and see if she still has a question.
It's just about just getting directly, saying directly to people, like, would you be able to identify what you really want, particularly a suicidal patient who has trouble probably identifying their or expressing their feelings. They may know but may not be able to say it. So instead of doing sort of this more long, drawn-out approach that is slower and takes time, and it helps develop safety. Also, what about, would you, you know, just throwing out the question is, you know, would you like, say, because it's such a charged topic, I feel, suicidal tendencies or suicidal gestures or thoughts, is to say, would you like someone to just say to you, I want you to stay, I don't want you to go? And really touching into that, you know, without, and it not being in an enmeshed thing, you know, but to really, you know, touch into the heart of what people want or may want.
Okay, so just speaking first to any self-consciousness that you may feel, I think
yeah.
that these kind of questions are excellent. All the questions that everybody has been asking today or things they've been sharing, I think have allowed us to address exactly what we need to in a spontaneous way rather than just kind of a, you know, a whiteboard type way. So I appreciate that. And this question, I think, is the same. And so what I want to do is ask you back a question. I think this will be helpful for everybody. With that question, are you really wanting somebody to ask you to stay?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Tell me as best as you can understand, what is it that you would mean to be accomplishing by that question?
Them opening to what they may want to say. They might want to. They may be feeling. They may be feeling lost or without support, or lonely, or left out, isolated. And they, you know, as a someone that they're probably paying to help them through their feelings, you know, there's the other side that, you know, if they say, yes, I'd like to hear you say that, and then, you know, you begin to enter more into a really personal space with them, and what can you really provide them besides the time that they're paying you to be with them. So there's that quandary there. But really trying to get to what the heart of maybe they may need or want.
Okay. So I get it. And I think that even maybe one step beneath what you're saying is that perhaps if they get a sense that you really care,
mm-hmm.
that they really matter to you, then that might kind of jumpstart their sense of safety and their willingness to, you know, go into these issues that have been so confusing and painful for them.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be accurate?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is what this is where I would say kind of a yes and, which is, if I start out with somebody in any situation, whether it's suicide, addiction, or, you know, anything that's going on with them that is very difficult, I want to start out letting them know that whatever they think or feel is okay with me, and that's what we've already covered. But also, I think you're absolutely right that the sense of loving care is just as important. In other words, it's not like I'm sitting here as just a neutral observer saying you're okay no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to know. I care enough to find out what it's really like for you. And I want to ask some questions and perhaps guide you into some explorations because I care completely and fully about that. So what you've surfaced is the idea, and so important, that without that sense of compassion and loving kindness brought to the acceptance of a person's state, that it might seem too clinical or dry, and what they really might need is that sense, you know, that you've got a blanket to wrap around them if they want it,
mm-hmm.
and that might draw them out. So that's the yes. The and is, if they haven't already spoken in some way about that particular piece that you just described, like somebody caring about them enough for them to stay, if I ask the question specifically the way that you were asking it, it might feel a little bit like a leading question.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some people, that isn't the issue. The issue is they're in so much pain that they think that the only thing that they can do to get out of the pain is to end it all.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that person, they need to know that you have the same kind of loving care about how much pain they're in.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to open up that person might be different than another person. And so the and part is just to make sure that when I offer the loving care, when I communicate with the intention of making sure that that person knows that I am right there with them in a loving way, that I do it in a way that is as open as possible and not as prematurely leading.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, does that distinction
make
sense?
Yes. Exactly. Thank you.
Okay, good. Well, thank you. But what I want to do now is talk about pretty much exactly where my conversation with Deborah a moment ago just left off. There are the two bullet points that were included in the description of this teleclass, which mentioned follow the resistance and quickly locate the core issue. And that's what I want to address right now. So I mentioned in the beginning of the teleclass that I don't think anybody has a problem. I don't think anybody needs my help. I don't think anybody needs emotional facilitation. And if they don't think that they need some exploration around a particular upset or issue in their life, then as far as I'm concerned, they are just to be accepted as they are. But most of the time when somebody comes to see me or when somebody is going to be willing to sit down with you for some time of this type of connection, it's because they feel stuck. There's something that's bothering or troubling them, or something they've wanted to experience in their lives that they haven't been able to, and that's why they're there. So what we want to be able to do is find out where the problem, quote unquote, is for them. And let me just be clear about what I mean. If they were in complete acceptance about the issue, if there wasn't something about it that created resistance for them, and remember, all resistance is emotional. So what that means is that something about the situation creates a feeling for them that they're not willing to feel, not able to feel. That's their resistance. If they didn't have that resistance, then they'd be free to be their best, most effective, and to experience their greatest well-being in terms of this particular issue or challenge. Therefore, no work to be done. So let me just describe that a little bit more. It's possible, let's say, to be broke. Okay, people often are dealing with money issues. It's possible to be broke because of a series of things that one didn't have any control over. Let's say there was an illness in the family and a person had to use up his or her life savings in order to pay for the medical bills. Maybe there's even a bankruptcy that happened. And it's challenging. There's no easy answer. But the person who you're talking to, it seems in full acceptance of this. You don't notice that they're contracting around a part of it, that there's a tight quality to the way they're holding the situation. They may just say, you know what, we don't have a cent to our name, and this is terrible, and I've, you know, cried a lot about it. Maybe they're crying about it right there in front of you, but it feels like they're in flow as opposed to stuck. Then, again, no work to be done. So what all that leads to is, as a facilitator, what you're wanting to do is to guide a person to share with you as quickly as possible what is the problem that they see. And by problem, of course, what I mean very simply is what causes them to contract, what causes them to feel stuck, to feel bad. So a lot of times I'll ask a question that is designed after I've heard a little bit about the situation. I'll ask a question that is designed to hone in on the resistance. So I might say, so what is the worst thing about this situation that you just described for me? Or what bugs you the most? So, for instance, just to elaborate a little bit more, Joy was talking about a lifelong pattern or patterns that she was interested in shifting. And when that kind of thing comes up, what I'll say to somebody is, okay, so this has been going on for years. I know you don't like it. I know you don't want it. You've probably even spent a lot of time trying to shift it. But what about it is the most annoying? Or what makes it feel sometimes to you that it's just intolerable? It makes you want to, you know, shake your fists. So any kind of question like that in your own words, in your own manner, that's designed to get to where the resistance is really important, you know, in this process. And there are some people who are really good at doing a lot of different kinds of healing work or therapeutic work, who are not even necessarily emotional connection is what I'm saying, who recognize also that probably the most profound way to help anybody get to a place of healing, transition, transformation where they need it is to follow the resistance. So in other words, we have talked about what is the internal state to help a person as best as possible and how to release interfering agendas. Those are all about the presence that you bring to the whole endeavor, which is the field of awareness and intention. If that's not clean and clear, then, you know, it will create all kinds of problems. But if it is, you've done that piece. You've shown up how you need to. Now we're talking about a technique within that field that is quick and powerful and helps a person describe for you what really is the essence of this challenge for them. And when you ask a question like, you know, so what is the worst thing about that? You might actually think you know, because either you've had a similar experience or you've seen this in your clients many times. But if you listen really carefully to that person's answer, what's the worst of it, or what's the core nature of their resistance, might be very different for them. So not only is it important to help them get as quickly as possible to where you can help them the most, but also it's to help you really clarify, is this what you think it is, or is there actually something different that you need to pay very close attention to? So that's what we mean by following the resistance and also quickly locating the core issue. Those are two ways, in essence, of saying the same thing, because once a person answers that question, it usually is pretty quick, pretty easy and quick for you to start to kind of get inside the situation from their perspective. So, for instance, I'll give you a personal example. Some of you know, because you may have heard me tell my stories before about when I was younger, but I had a penchant when I was in my teens and through my 20s, when it came to relationships with women, to always seek out and draw towards me what I would call the wounded birds. And there was this sense that I loved them partially because they were so vulnerable and broken, and I wanted to mend their wings. But also there was a little bit of a hopeful trade in that, which was if I could mend their wings, then they would love me back. And, you know, this obviously, as you can gather, was a big failure over and over and over again, a terribly painful pattern for me. But in the pattern, if I talked about it at that time, I said, what's the worst about it? It's, first of all, that I would give and give and give so much, and then it would never work out. They would never actually be able to love me. Or if I helped them heal and grow, they'd end up going and giving their love to somebody else. So if the person I am today was in session with the person I was back then, and I was talking about what's the worst of it, I think one of the things that would have come up was something really clear in that story I was just telling, which is there's a sense of having to win or earn someone's love. It wasn't just that I would have found someone at the time who liked me and I liked them and we got into a deeper relationship and love naturally blossomed. There was an idea that from the very beginning I had to work at it. And then on top of that, it was a failed mission no matter what. So it was kind of like this, I'm damned if I do, I'm damned if I don't. But if I was sitting there in session with myself, I would have said something along the lines of, so I notice that you're saying that you want to work really hard to help them heal. Do you feel that just as you are, without having given somebody something else, without having fixed them or provided some kind of service, that they would actually, that anybody who you would be interested in would love you back? And so what I would be trying to do in that situation was listen to what I'd heard and try to bring forth more that would get to the emotional component beneath the resistance. So just to kind of cut to the chase in terms of the example that I'm giving you here, Groucho Marx had a famous joke. He said, I would never want to belong to a club that would have me as a member. And in this situation, I didn't want to get into a relationship with somebody who would love me just for who I was, because I didn't really feel lovable for who I was. And what I was doing, and now we'll just like kind of step out of the situation and use kind of more technical psychological language, I was projecting my vulnerability onto all of these wounded birds because I couldn't own it in myself. So part of my healing journey was to find that place that was broken in me and learn how to heal that myself so that I could bring some freedom, awareness, and acceptance to my romantic relationships. So the reason I'm telling you this story is that if you helped me find the resistance, if you helped me follow the resistance to this place where I'm talking about these wounded birds, etc., and you're sensing that there's this need to earn love, and you ask some questions that are gentle and inviting that help me look at that, if I can come to the place where I realize that I don't feel deserving of love without having won it or earned it, then that leads you to a place where you can ask, okay, so what's wrong with you? This is really fascinating. This is a question that I ask people a lot in my individual client sessions. We get to a place, it might be about a completely different issue. We get to a place like the one I just described where suddenly it's right there, full and clear in the space, that they don't feel good enough or worthy. There are a lot of synonyms for that feeling, but the not good enough feeling is, like, I think, the biggest epidemic in our culture. And so I like to put it to people in a very gentle but also provocative way. What's wrong with you? And when they tell me, what they've done is they've, along with me, gotten very quickly to the heart of the matter. Because there's this emotion of unworthiness or not good enough, whatever you want to call it, or whatever seems to resonate most for that person, which is the intolerable emotion for that person. And their resistance, which is probably very old, is about not wanting or being able to feel that. And so for years and years, there's been a battle, like a push me, pull you inside of them, where that feeling of not good enough comes up, but almost instantaneously the resistance squashes it down. But then, since what you resist persists, it keeps coming back over and over in the form of a relationship like the one I was describing in my own life or some pattern at work. But now we have a real opportunity because we found what's beneath the resistance and we can start to welcome that part of us which we've been in a state of constant agitation and resistance against, probably by the time somebody sits down with you, for at least years, if not decades. So it could be that somebody is telling you about a problem they're having at work, or with their spouse, or their partner, or, you know, their kids. But if you're following the resistance, as I just described, and listening for it, and asking the questions that are going to help get to the core emotion that is what the resistance is trying to prevent, you may be very quickly off of the original topic, but on the very thing that's going to be the most helpful for that person. So let me put that another way. I was working with a woman who had real issues with her teenage daughter. And, by the way, there's somebody on the call today who has issues with her teenage daughter, so I just want you to know I'm not speaking about you. This is somebody from many years ago who found that her daughter would transgress her boundaries all the time, and she would get incredibly resistant, and they'd get into a big tug of war, and it would escalate. And as we did this work together, following the resistance, we got to the point where we realized, okay, the resistance is about the feeling of being a bad parent. This was like a fate worse than death for this mom. So whenever her daughter acted out and it scratched that wound, that deep secret worry or belief that she was a bad mother, she would go nuts. Her resistance would just be amped up to incredible proportions, and there you had the endless cycle between her and her daughter. But once she got to the place where she could see that it was the feeling of being a bad parent that was so hard for her to accept, then there was a chance for some really huge steps forward. And what that's about, and this kind of takes us to the next place where we're heading, is that when you find that feeling, it's really important to help somebody understand that accepting that feeling doesn't mean accepting its verdict about you. In other words, if I find a place in myself that believes that I'm a loser, going into complete and full acceptance, welcoming that part of me home, the loser, so to speak, doesn't mean that it's actually true that I'm a loser. It's not about the beliefs that might come forward when I'm in that emotional state or the thoughts about me. It's just a recognition that that's there and it deserves its place in me the same way that everything in the universe has its own place in the, let's say, overall mystical and mysterious divine plan that's beyond us. So if I've got a place in me that feels like I'm a loser, or the woman I just spoke about who feels like she's a bad parent, my way forward, my growth and healing is going to come from bringing that part out of the cold and home finally inside of me, which is what some meditation teachers will call stopping the war. And so when you start saying yes to that part of you that you said no to, that's the beginning of any really powerful change. And when you can bring somebody who you're working with professionally or personally to first finding out that that's there and then taking the first steps towards actually being able to accept that part, that's where all the magic, all the healing, and all the real transformation happens. So following the resistance and getting to the core emotion is really the heart of this process, and it's how you can be of the best service for somebody, even if that's not at all what they originally thought their presenting concern was.
Thank you so much. Sure. I've been taking notes. I'm absorbing all of this. I'm on the East Coast and fully awake.
Okay.
And so I was trying to see, it's like, I know I have questions. You know, how can I hone in on it? And I think that the best way to say, you know, that this is also true for me, in the person that I'm discussing here, which I'm not a therapist. This is, you know, just a connection that has many levels to it. Their perpetual answer to a lot of things is, I don't know. And so one of the things that I'm learning, because I'm in classes about how the difference of the brain of men and women, is that that is truly a legitimate answer for a man. Even though we as women cannot fathom that that could possibly be true, the I don't know is real. So as I'm relating it to myself, when you were saying about, you know, what is it that you've been in perpetual agitation against, and I know I've got my own thing, it's like, gee, would I really be able to have the confidence that I would have correctly identified that? So how does one go from, I don't know, I'm willing, you know, there's stuff there, I acknowledge, but clueless?
Well, I think the short answer for that is through the very kinds of questions that I was describing. So when somebody says, I don't know, as you said, it's a totally legitimate answer, but then it's my job as a facilitator to ask the questions that are going to help guide that person into a fuller understanding. So if I ask the question, you know, so what's the worst thing about that? And they said, I don't really know. Then I would just keep trying to come at it like if it was 360 degrees from all different directions. I would say, well, so do you notice when you feel the most agitated, or, you know, when you tense up about that? And so I would ask some more questions like that. But if the person also was just continuing to be kind of on an I don't know, then I would ask some questions that are more about direct experience. So as I'm having this conversation with you right now, what do you notice that you're feeling in your body? I would turn them to that, and maybe they would say, oh, I'm not feeling much of anything. And you say, well, so just take a moment and see what comes to you without any trying, because, by the way, this process is never about trying. Just notice, like it might even just be your knee itches or whatever. And I would bring a person into fuller awareness that way, because if they're not on antidepressants of a significant dose or they're not completely numbed out, then just by starting to report even simple sensations in their body, that numbness that they're feeling is going to start to dissolve a little bit. So usually I would follow, like, you know, the cat with the yarn starting to unravel the ball. If I haven't been able to get them to clarify and even feel in the moment the resistance that they have in a particular situation, then I would switch to actually letting it be a different ball of yarn that follows from the physical sensations. And so if it was just a scratch or a tension in my shoulders or an ache, you know, in my stomach, then I would go into some of the techniques we're going to talk about first thing tomorrow to help them amplify those sensations, which usually come back around to the issue that we were talking about in the first place. So that's a short answer, and the end of the answer is more to come on that tomorrow. Okay, Joy?
Terrific. Thanks.
All right, good. Thank you. But going back to the one thing holding you back, you know, that technique that is the core of the book is particularly about stuckness. And there is a step in that process that's outlined in the book, which is asking yourself when you're stuck, not moving forward in a particular direction, what's the worst thing that could happen if I did go forward, and how might that make me feel? That's a question that works in certain situations. It makes sense sometimes if, like, for instance, you're trying to, you know, change careers, but you're not signing up for the courses that you need to learn new skills, or there's some practical steps that you need to take. Even if it's like having a hard conversation with somebody in your family, you know you should do it and you're not doing it. And that leads to that question, what's the worst thing that could happen? And then the follow-up, how would it make me feel? But what you're hearing tonight and what you responded to positively, and I appreciate that, is a different kind of question, but in the same family of questions, which is, what is the worst thing about that? Because a lot of times you might feel stuck in a different way. It's just, I'm stuck in this arena of my life, but it isn't about not moving in a particular direction. I just feel like I don't have the full vision and clarity that I might need, or I don't have the emotional freedom and flow that would allow me to bring my best and be my best in this situation. So that's why the question is more generally stated. It's not so much about a goal when you ask, so what's the worst thing about that situation? But it is designed to get to the heart of the matter in the same way. And this brings up something which might maybe make a click for somebody. When there is a more direct kind of stuckness about taking action, like what that book, The One Thing Holding You Back, is more focused on, it's how you might feel in the future. That's true. It's future focused. But the resistance is there in the present. In other words, you've had that emotion before. Your system has said, I'm not going to have it again. And even the anticipation of it coming again is enough to get that resistance up in motion and, you know, ready to duke it out. So I just wanted to clarify that even when we're looking to the future and asking what's the worst thing that could happen, it's still really because we're trying to find out what's the resistance that's present right now. And sometimes that helps to look forward, and in some cases, like you're describing, it's better just to stay in the now. And I would say that for anybody listening with the eye of a facilitator, it's good to have as many different sort of similar tools in your toolbox, and sometimes one is going to make more sense and sometimes the other, and just be ready and willing to listen carefully and see which is going to make the most sense for the for that person right then and there. Last but not least for tonight, let's hear from Joy.
Hi. Well, I'm going to keep it brief. I was expecting 3 hours each time, so I appreciate that you're flexible around that. I brought myself to tremendous laughter because I came up with answers to those questions that you were asking, you know, what is it that you've been agitated against, or what's the worst thing about this, et cetera, et cetera. And so I was laughing at my own answers, which is a great release. And I suppose you're going to say that you'll address it tomorrow, but I'm wondering then, it's kind of like, then what? It's great that I could laugh. It's great that I could see it, accept it, you know, even make warm fun at myself about having dragged this around for decades. But in the end, as I'm looking at then the situations that have been at an impasse for me, where I have felt stuck and I've taken no action out of concern that I would either fail again or make it worse, then how do you support somebody in making a new inroad and developing a new strategy for facing those areas that I'll speak about myself, the areas I would have backed away from just saying I can't face that.
Right. Well, it's a great thing that you brought to us, because it's a way for us to kind of end in a rousing fashion and get us ready for tomorrow. There's a central premise in all of this work, and that is that our brains go into a kind of a freeze. Not just the fight-flight freeze mechanism, but our brains start working at cross purposes when we want to experience or achieve something, but we also have a sense, based on our past experience or our future projection or both, that if it doesn't go the way we want, then we're going to feel something in particular. And our unwillingness and inability to feel that feeling is what's keeping us stuck. That's number one. Number two, the next premise here is that that nature of our brains is something that we can update or rewire, so to speak. And the way we do that is by introducing that very dreaded feeling into our system in a gentle, incremental, and manageable way, so that the part of our brain, it's the primitive or reptilian brain, that thinks it's actually life-threatening to have that feeling, starts to realize, oh, it isn't. It's just a wave that passes through, and I can actually not only survive that, but I can help that process, and in the end, get to feel better and more effective and more successful. So, when you find that feeling that might come up, as you were saying, for instance, Joy, like for, you know, like when I might not do something because I might fail again, or because I might make it worse. Underneath each of those concerns, there would be a feeling. Once that feeling is identified and you have the ability to actually begin to feel it, and therefore to update your brain to recognize that it's not life-threatening, not a fate worse than death perhaps, you actually remove those cross wires. You put them together effectively so that you're not stuck. And you see possibilities, and you're able to take steps that you weren't before. And how this connects to what we were talking about at the beginning of the call is that because you no longer see the experience that you're having or that you might have as a problem. It's just what will be or what is right now, and your acceptance of what is or what may come to pass sets you free. And I'm going to describe that another way real briefly in case it's not all the way getting in. when we're in resistance to any particular emotion, our life is run by our resistance to that emotion. So we make our choices and we chart our life course based on not feeling that feeling. But once we're able and willing to feel that feeling, then we're free. And not only are we free, but our minds are at their best. They're most creative, they're most peaceful, they're most joyful, so that even if what happens doesn't go the way we want, it's still not a problem. It's just something else to be with and to move through and to once again move toward our preferences as best as possible. So negative and lifelong patterns shift once we feel the emotions that those patterns have been attempting, even though unsuccessfully, attempting to keep away from us. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, that's really very clearly put, and I love that. And I'll just throw this in just so that maybe we could include it tomorrow. One of the questions that I had disconnected with previously was precisely addressing what you just said. You know, I'll just rephrase it in my own languaging when you're saying, you know, that your life is run by the avoidance of that feeling. So there was a point when you were addressing about asking somebody questions, and I thought, well, what if the answers are coming from still that almost like hypnotic trance that, you know, we can fall into, that automatic pilot conditioning, that everything is so colored by those, you know, purple glasses that everything looks purple, that even though you think you're giving your best, honest answer, it's still coming out of complete automatic pilot conditioning, and therefore you're not really possibly getting to a core issue, let's say, if your agenda is to mask it. Yeah, to not see it. If your agenda is to avoid that, then, you know, everything's going to be in function of supporting your own avoidance, would it not?
Yeah, so this is, I think this is what I'm hearing in your question. You tell me if I got it right. If you've spent so much time and energy over the years invested in avoiding this situation, this problem, then as you go forward in this process that would actually reverse things and bring you towards that feeling, wouldn't the part of you that has used avoidance as a strategy continue to try to subvert things?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the answer to that is anytime we try to change by willpower, meaning one part of us pit against another, it never works because the part that loses just goes underground and then finds a way to get its voice heard and its needs met down the road. The only way that I know that we can change successfully and over the long term is through a process of self-acceptance in which all parts of us are welcome. So what that means is if a part of us says, you know, I don't want to change, then we don't try to transform or get rid of or make that wrong or bad. We say in the field of this open and accepting space that we've been talking about tonight, well, that's interesting. Let's hear more about that. And in the process of moving forward through self-acceptance, whatever isn't with the program actually either shows up or has a spotlight shown on it very quickly. So, for instance, if it doesn't show up right away, and then, like I was working with a gentleman today who plays video games at an extent that's threatening his marriage, well, we didn't want to make playing video games wrong. That was an avoidance strategy for sure. We wanted him to pay more attention and have greater awareness when he was making the decision to play for 6 hours instead of one. And he got to a place through his awareness and his willingness to have self-acceptance where he said, he uncovered a part of himself that just says, I don't want to stop because nobody can tell me what to do. And this was really important because if he hadn't surfaced through paying attention, the part of him that says nobody can tell me what to do, and we tried to go forward and make changes in his video game playing, we would have been in a place of self-opposition, not self-acceptance. We wouldn't have gotten anywhere. So the point is, we want to allow every part that's not with the program to come forward. We want to shine a light on those that are trying to subvert things through behaviors or somehow without coming straight out and saying it. And then the last thing I would say about that is that in a field of accepting awareness, what is subconscious, that needs to come forward does come forward. And this, I guess I would say, is an optimistic or hopeful part of the perspective that I'm sharing with you tonight, and that is, except in cases of extraordinary mental illness, the parts of ourselves that have been running the show behind the scenes want a better way. They're not bent on destroying us just because, or because they think we deserve to be destroyed. That once we create this accepting internal state and have a keen awareness for what's there within us, it all does come to the surface. And I can just say honestly, Joy, in all my experience of working with people, I haven't found a sabotaging or somehow subverting persona or aspect that with enough loving attention doesn't reveal itself for what it truly is, which is either a fear that can be loved whole if it's a misperception or an inaccurate fear, or an old strategy that probably saved our lives a long time ago, or at least really helped us get through some difficult periods, but that isn't serving us anymore. So those parts of us that are old strategies that are getting in trouble, if we come to them with an appreciation for how they arose and a recognition that they were very helpful, usually it's not hard for those parts of us to recognize they only know one thing to do. But if there was a better thing to do, they would allow us to experiment with that and to explore, because they're not there out of ill will. They're there because that's all they know how to do to help. And so I guess what I'm saying about the optimism and the hope and the good news part of this perspective, and certainly in the work that I've done with so many people, is that I have never found a subverting part or a negative pattern that, once in the full light of acceptance, isn't willing to let us find a new and better way. How does that resonate with you as a first pass at the answer to your question?
That's gorgeous. Yes, absolutely. And I do know the truth of that. I absolutely recognize it. It's a matter, I suppose, for me to really have perhaps the beginning step has missed about the accurate identification of the starting point, you know, that to unravel the part that keeps the momentum of the repetition going. So, but I do know that what you said is absolutely true.
Okay, good. Good. So I think that's a good place for us to end tonight. I want to say thank you to all of you for being on the call and for having such great questions and feedback. I look forward to talking to you all tomorrow night. So good night, everybody.